We're doing our class Judaism from head to toe, our class in practical halacha. And last week we described the laws of wearing a yarmulke. Now we will move forward to the laws of haircuts and wigs and men and women. And let's begin. So when we cut our hair, we're not supposed to cut our hair like the pagans do. Torah says you're not supposed to cut off the payas of your head. What about leaving a huge amount of hair coming out of your head? So there are opinions that say that when there's an extraordinary amount of hair that that a person has coming off of his head in the front, that grows unnaturally at some point. You know, like the knights used to have all these big fancy curls. So a person can get to a point where it's unnatural, and that would pose a chatzitza, a separation that his tefillin cannot be donned properly. Some people live in very cold countries where they cannot reveal their heads because they would catch a cold. So nowadays we have heating, but once upon a time they didn't. So people used to wear these big yarmulkes that they would never take off for fear of catching a cold. And that's why the Rashba writes to these people that they could don their tefillin on that yarmulke, because you don't ask a person to get sick for putting on tefillin in the morning. If you can take it off, you should. But if you can't, so you put it on this thin yarmulke. What if it's a big, thick hat? You know, like the Hasidish hats, right? You're going to put your tefillin there. That doesn't count. You know, that's not... If it's a thin... The Rashba was talking about a thin cap, and the Rashba was only talking about scenarios where you have no choice. And from there, we will still discuss, as we go down the body, what about a cast? If you wear a cast, so you do don tefillin on a cast, if the cast is on the arm but not on the upper arm, you can make a blessing. If it's on the upper arm, that's a machlokas. Each person will ask the local Orthodox rabbi whether they should make a blessing on that or not. But that's not our subject right now. We're still dealing with the head. So the upper part of the head, we put on tefillin. It says you put on tefillin on the part of the head where you would have a biblical prohibition of shaving that part of the head over someone who's deceased. The Torah says, don't pull out your hairs over someone that died. So wherever you could pull out hairs, that's where you're allowed to put on tefillin. Up to where? Now this is going on, you know, by me. Once upon a time I had hair growing down to here, right? So so I could put on my tefillin down to here, down to where I used to have hair growing. How far up? So it's called Makom Shemacho Shetinok Rofes, the upper part of the head where a baby has a pulse, where he has the soft spot, the fontanelle. So up until that, you could put on your tefillin. That's not a problem. But if it goes beneath the hairline, that's not good. What about the back of the head? So there you could put on the tefillin along the back of the head where hair grows. Once you go down to the neck, that's not kosher. So sometimes people have a huge gap between the amount of hair they have on their head before haircut or after haircut. They might have to shift the knot of their tefillin so that the tefillin don't go down beneath the hairline. We're moving on with our heads. A person goes bald and he decides he would like to do a hair implant. So you're allowed to wear tefillin on top of a hair implant. What if a person would like to glue hair onto their head? That's also considered, like that becomes a part of the head, and you could wear tefillin on top of that. They used to have, my dad, I don't know if they still have it, wigs that you could sew into the scalp. People used to have these permanent wigs that were sewed on. So those you could put tefillin on top of, because that's permanent. What about a person that wears a wig, but he takes it off at night? So the halacha doesn't tell him that he has to take it off in shul. The Mishnah Berurah says it's a chatzitza. You can't put tefillin on top of the wig. But Rav Moshe says, so when you go home from shul, you won't make a blessing on the wig in shul. No one knows you're wearing a wig. I have relatives that they wear wigs. No one knows they wear wigs. I have second cousins where one wears a wig and no one knows about it. Another one wears a wig and he doesn't mind that everyone knows about it. So they're brothers. So one of them is always making sure his hair is nice, his wig is nice. And the other one will be at family simchas and he'll go, boy, it's hot. And he'll take off his wig for a minute, you know, dab his head and put it back on. And they're brothers standing one next to the other, right? A wig that you take off, a lot of people would be uncomfortable taking it off in shul to put on tefillin. So the Igros Moshe says, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you'll put your tefillin on the wig without a blessing. And when you get home, you'll take off the wig and put it directly on your scalp with a blessing for a few seconds, right? So you do the mitzvah tefillin ideally. What about women wearing wigs? So this brings us into the whole concept of women covering their hair. The Torah says that when a woman is caught being a sota, where her husband sees her going in seclusion with another man, he says, do me a favor, I don't want you to be alone with that guy, and then she does it again. So then, under certain circumstances, he takes her up to the temple and gives her the sota waters to drink. So it says part of the process of drinking the sota waters is that her hair covering is removed. From there we learn that a married woman is going to have her hair covered. Now we have certain things that are written in Torah. We have certain things that are called dat yehudit. They're the way Jewish people behave. And a husband is, a normal husband expects his wife to behave the way Jewish women behave. So there are elements of modesty that it doesn't exactly define in Torah, but it's up to paying attention. What do Jewish women do? So in ancient times, women would not cover their hair in their yards. They would have courtyards, and in the house, for sure, they didn't cover their hair. Technically, halachically, a woman could say, I'm doing what it says in halacha. I cover my hair when I go out. I don't cover my hair in the house, etc. Today, it's pretty much accepted. I don't know of too many people that take off their hair covering at home, because when girls get married, so very often a girl will open the door and sometimes even go out without her hair covering because she forgot. I don't know if you'll see it, but it's been known to happen that a woman will be standing in the middle of the street and suddenly go... She suddenly realized she left the house without her head covering. What do you want? Her whole life, that's how she lived, you know. Or a woman will answer the door, and the neighbor will be standing there looking at the floor because he notices she forgot to put on her head covering. Technically, halachically, it's kosher, but that doesn't mean she's comfortable with it, and that's not what we do today. Today, it's pretty much the norm that women cover their heads around the house as well. But it's perfectly permissible if the head covering is difficult for your wife. She's allowed to take it off around the house. The only issue is you can't make blessings, you can't learn out loud when her head's uncovered. So many women, when they come to Suda Shlishit, or when it comes time for Havdalah, they might not have their head covering on so well, because it's the relaxed time at the end of Shabbos. But if you want to make a blessing, you want to make Havdalah, she has to cover her hair. Even though she's your wife, you cannot make blessings or say things that are holy in her presence when her hair is uncovered. So what type of head covering does a woman have to put on?
So it's only for married women. Single women don't have to.
In the last millennium, our custom has been, or not millennium, about 750 years, our custom has been that single women do not cover their hair. In ancient times, single girls also covered their hair. That's what's quoted in Rambam. I mean, the Yemenites still do it. The single girls used to cover their hair. There is a Magen Avram that the Hasidim are careful with. Magen Avram writes that the modest way that girls should walk around is in braids. That's why you'll see the Hasidic girls, you'll never see their hair spread out. And it's become accepted in most of the more, I don't know what to call it, but a lot of the different streams of observant Judaism today, you'll see the girls always walk around either in braids or a cuckoo, because it says in the Magen Avraham that that's less modest, that a girl's hair is all spread out. But that doesn't mean that at home with her husband, she can't walk around with her hair like that. What shocks me is that women will get a wig with the hair like that. So what'd you do? Whatever. Let's begin with halacha. How does this work? So a woman has to cover her hair from the minute she's married. Well, not exactly. There are two opinions on this. Some say from the beginning, from the marriage. Some say from when you come home that night. And that's been the custom of the Jewish people. Most people, the kala did not cover her hair. In the last few decades, it's become this new fad that girls at the wedding cover their hair. They go into the cheder yichud, and when they come out, they're either wearing a sheitel, a wig, or they're wearing a head covering. They didn't used to do this. My wife didn't do it. She asked me, and I told her my understanding is that our mothers didn't do it, our grandmothers didn't do it, and the rabbis approve of their not doing it. It wasn't the custom of Israel, so we didn't do it. But today, again, your friends might not think you're Orthodox if your wife doesn't cover her hair after. Rav Avram Shapiro held that the hinuma, the veil that they wear, which they toss back afterwards, is enough of a hair covering, that that's what we rely on. But others give other reasons. Others say she's not obligated till you come home that night. So at any rate, what does she have to cover her hair with? So we have different opinions. Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that a woman may leave showing lechatchila up to a tefach by a tefach. That means a woman could leave this much by this much hair showing. Okay? That's a pretty big area that she's allowed to leave showing. It could be in the front, it could be in the back. It's a total area. Okay? It's a measurement of area. Up until about 30 years ago, even the women that were all careful about covering their hair would leave that much showing. Now we have to understand, and among Ashkenazi Jewry, we have a historical problem. Ashkenazi Jewry were not careful about their wives covering their hair. Or, put more accurately, the women didn't cover their hair. It's well known that they asked one of the leading Orthodox rabbis at the turn of the century why his wife doesn't cover her hair, and his answer was, ask her. What was he supposed to say? You know, the girls didn't have such good education. And the girls wanted their husbands to learn Torah, but they weren't dressed so modestly, and many of them would not cover their hair. So it was very hard to find a woman who would, among many Ashkenazi Jewry. And this includes Hasidim and Lithuanians, and if you see real pictures, today they're modifying the pictures. It's pretty disgusting. They're really editing history. If you see pictures from 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years ago, and more, you will see the most rabbinic families with women without their head covering. But again, today they're not even, they're unabashedly doing it in a lousy way. You can see pictures in Rav Shlomo Zalman's biography. There are pictures there where you see a black marker covered of woman's hair. Like, it's a picture from 100 years ago. They didn't do it professionally. They just put a black marker and that's how they printed it. Okay, so it was a problem. And no one says it was right. But it was reality. So then people started being more careful about it. And which hair covering should a woman put on? So technically, halachically, there's definitely a strong weight that when a woman wears a wig, it's kosher. Ah, there's a chassam sofer that says a wig equals real hair. And the chassam sofer says you cannot make a blessing in the presence of a wig. You can't daven in the presence of a wig. First of all, his opinion wasn't accepted. Secondly, just so you understand, I'm going to show you two extremities. The Chassam Sofer spoke about a wig that looks like our mop today. Okay? They were never as skilled at making wigs like they are today. And even in the wigs from 150, 200 years ago, the Chassam Sofer said a wig is not kosher. So we have to understand that there is tremendous halachic weight prohibiting wearing a wig. And nonetheless, you cannot ignore the tremendous halachic weight that permits it. And that's why when I asked Rav Feinstein whether I should try to find a girl that doesn't wear a wig, he said, forget it. Don't bother. And when your wife wears a wig, don't give her a hard time over it. It's okay. I said, but won't you agree that the spirit of the law is... He said, okay, spirit of the law, spirit of the law. If that's what she's comfortable, no one would argue that it's better that she wears a different type of head covering, but it's still kosher and don't make a fuss out of it. Okay, I was fortunate to make aliyah, and here in Eretz Yisrael there are plenty of girls who cover their hair, not with a wig, with a tichel and the other stuff, and hats and whatever. But bottom line, it's kosher. You can't, again, you'll see all kinds of signs saying Rav Vosner says, Rav Chacham Ovadia says, it's true. There are big halachic opinions who said it wasn't kosher, but there are big halachic opinions who say it is kosher, and bottom line, it's kosher. Now, before you assume that it's a good idea to be so stringent, you have to remember that a Jewish man leaves his house, and on the bus he sees advertisements, and he sees girls that are dressed in alluring ways, and he goes to work, and he has a secretary that might be single, and he's going to meet women that are dressed attractively, and then he comes home, and what? His wife is dealing with the kids, and this kid just wiped his nose on her dress, and that kid just spilled his cereal on her. And if he never sees his wife beautiful, so that's not so good for the Jewish home. And so don't be so quick to assume it's a good idea to be stringent and say, I want my wife to wear the other type of head coverings. She should never wear a wig. There are definitely advantages halachically to wearing other types of head coverings, but don't underestimate the importance of having a wife that you feel is beautiful. Ezra made a special institution that the men would go around and that they would have merchants selling beauty care to the women. Ezra, he's compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. He has nothing better to do than ensure there's beauty care for the Jewish women. The answer is yes, it's important. When the Jewish women come and they want to dedicate their mirrors to the temple, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I love those mirrors. Those are the mirrors that kept the Jewish women beautiful and kept the Jewish home intact. You shouldn't underestimate the importance of a husband feeling that his wife is beautiful. And very often he won't feel that way if she's not wearing a wig. So a woman should dress up for her husband and not be so dressed for everyone else when she goes outside the house. But that's a separate point. Bottom line, you can't ignore the opinions that say it's kosher, and that's why you shouldn't be so quick to assume it's better to wear the other head coverings. It's known that Chacham Avadya held that it's completely forbidden to wear a wig. It's known that the Rebbe of Chabad held that it's the ideal, and I'm just giving you the gamut. Bottom line, there's much to rely on to say that a wig is permissible. Now, one of the issues we run into with wigs is that much of the hair that's brought for the wigs is brought from India. And in India, they have these temples where masses come and they shave their head as part of the procession of worshiping this idol. And the monks over there collect all this hair, and they make millions and millions of dollars off of this, because every wig costs about $2,000-$3,000. The good wigs in America, right? $2,000-$3,000 a wig. And the average person who sells a wig has in their store 50 wigs. That's the average person, and they have more than that. They have about 100 wigs. So the average person over there has about $250,000 in their store worth of wigs. And you have to factor that they sell about two or three a day. I'm saying at the end of the day, it's a multi-million dollar industry, the wig industry, in Brooklyn, in Flatbush, in Europe, in Israel, the people who wear wigs. So the problem is that it's very hard. They discovered that if they tell us that it was used as part of the pagan practices, then we say it's not kosher, or it might not be kosher. So they know what the right lines are. They're not worshiping the idol when they cut off their hair. They first cut off their hair, then they walk in to worship the idol. They have all these wonderful lines. But the truth, we don't know. Is it part of the idol worship or not? So they made a big stink about it 10 years ago. I don't know why, because a big stink was made about it 20 years ago. Rav Ozner wrote a tshuva about it 20 years ago. But that's the way politics works. Sometimes someone decides to make a big stink about something that someone already made a big stink about 10 years before him, but it hits the headlines and then it becomes a big stink. Okay, so at any rate, if you're going to buy a wig for your wife, you should make sure that the wig is from a good source. That you know it's not coming from India. The people who want to say that the Indian wigs are kosher, my understanding from my teachers are that they should not be relied upon. That it's very hard to verify when there's a multi-million dollar industry that's trying to ensure you don't know the real facts, that you're getting a certain storyline. And that's why one should not rely on those leniencies and say, I'm buying an Indian wig. No, pay the extra dollar and get the wigs you could be sure are kosher. You don't bring something into your house that might be idol worship. You want to be lenient in other areas. Eat chalav stam, go and eat M&Ms. Go, there are other areas to be lenient on. You shouldn't be lenient when it comes to something that might be pagan. That's not an area to be lenient on. Your wife can wear a wig, that's fine, but get a kosher wig. A wig that's 100% kosher according to all opinions. Because this is one of the most serious prohibitions, the prohibition of idol worship. That's not a place to play games. Okay, so we discussed wigs a little bit. What else do we need to know? Chacham Avadya holds you could reveal up to four fingers, not like Rav Moshe that a whole hand's width. And also he holds that ideally you don't reveal any part of your hair. Again, as we discussed earlier, today it's like the fad that you don't have a single hair showing. Well, the Talmud says there was an extraordinary woman whose children all became high priests, and they asked her, what did you do extraordinary? And she said, oh, I never had a single hair showing. What does that teach us? That everyone else did have single hairs showing, okay? She was the extraordinary one. So today everyone says, no, I'm going to be that extraordinary woman. That's very nice and unrealistic. The Torah doesn't expect us to be unrealistic. People drive themselves crazy to catch every little hair, and then they shave all these hairs from everywhere. You don't have to do that. According to Rav Moshe, it's even the chatchila to leave a tefach by a tefach showing. So, you want to be stringent, you want to keep all hair covered, fine. What we're going to deal with next is the Hasidic custom of women shaving their head. Was that what you wanted me to talk about? How'd I know? Okay, so there's this new custom that evolved about 200 years ago that Hasidim have their wives shave their head. It's a new custom. As is written in the Igros Moshe, there was a guy who writes to Rav Moshe that he's marrying a girl and he's a chassid and she should accept his customs. She should shave her head. And Rav Moshe writes back, you stop shaving your beard, but don't make her shave her head. In a nutshell, it's according to our approach, meaning the Lithuanian opinion is generally the Ashkenazi opinion is that it is an invention. Now, if you're going to marry a girl from a Hasidic home, so they have this whole procession. Many, many Hasidim have this procession where they get together, I think, the night before or the day before the wedding, and each one gets to shear off a lock of her hair as the girl is sitting there crying her eyeballs out. I'm not exaggerating. Many girls have said that it was one of the most traumatic things that happened in their lives. It's not so simple, this quote-unquote custom. But you're not going to have a say in the matter. If you're marrying a Hasidic girl, and this is what her family does, then from the time she was 2 years old, she knew that she's going to have to part with that beautiful hair before the wedding. But what a lot of Hasidim have told me is that in the privacy of their own home, their wife doesn't use a shaver to shave her head. Some women do. They consider it that they're very pious and they shave their head. But it's clear from Chazal, it's clear that that's not what was done. I'm saying, you want to say it's a minag? Rav Moshe didn't view it as a minag. He was gentle in his wording, but you sense he was not happy about it. Part of the beauty a woman's supposed to have is the beauty of her hair for us. I mean, the halacha discusses, you have all simanim, you have gemaros about it, that a married woman, when she goes to mikvah, how she ensures that her hair isn't tangled. It's very clear she's supposed to have hair that could get tangled, right? It's obvious all over in halacha. I'm saying there's no question about it that Klal Yisrael did not do this. What my Hasidic friends told me is that many women can't, in their society, have long hair because it's just not accepted. So they grow their hair like a boy. They have short hair. But what can I say? I don't know to what extent it goes. Meaning, but I can say that there's definitely room to not do it. But I don't think you can, if you're going to marry into Hasidic circles, I don't think you can interfere with what's done before the wedding. It's pretty clear in Talmud and in the Rishonim that it is considered something ugly, a bold woman. But it's clear in Tanakh. I'm saying the Pasuk describes the curse of the girls who were promiscuous. That when the temple would be destroyed, so one of the curses Hashem gives them is that they'll become bold. It's very clear. I'm saying it's clear in Tanakh, it's clear in Talmud, it's clear in Shulchan Aruch. Where this custom came from, don't ask me. I have no idea. It's a new thing. New, I mean, by Jewish standards, it's only 200 years old. I'm saying, but bottom line, you can't fight City Hall. If a person's going to join that community, you have to figure out what you can do within the confines of what's accepted over there. Okay, so I think we've exhausted to a large degree what there is to say about wigs and men's hair. What we have to discuss next week, Bezrat Hashem, or next time, tomorrow night, is the laws of Be'at HaRosh. Can I make myself one of those modern haircuts like the Arab soccer players have, that people have started adopting, of shaving off the side of the head, right? So we'll discuss that Bezrat Hashem tomorrow night. We'll do Dov's Minute now.